Well, the solution, I suppose we're going to hear lots of them. There will be calls for more stringent gun control. There will be calls probably for better protection of the president. Maybe a lower profile, maybe less accessibility. And there will be discussions undoubtedly as to how a man who doesn't have press credentials could have mingled in an area in which it was thought only press people were. All of those barn doors locking. And we'll hear a lot more about that in days to come. We still haven't heard from the hospital the exact condition of the president post-operatively, or whether, in fact, the operation is finished entirely. But the outlook is said to be optimistic. Mr. President himself told bystanders as he walked into the hospital, "Don't worry." This was about 2:30 this afternoon. Senate Republican leader Howard Baker was briefed and said the bullet was in the lung, but the recovery is considered, he said, to be certain. As we say, a Washington policeman and a Secret Service agent were also wounded, and more seriously than the president. Perhaps the most badly hurt of all is the presidential press secretary, James Brady, who was struck in the head by a bullet. Very little has been learned about the suspect, the man under arrest, Mr. Hinckley of Colorado, lives up in the suburb there of Evergreen, not far out of Denver. The vice president, as we know, has now returned to Washington. He has made no statement as yet. He'll be briefed, undoubtedly, by the White House, by Secretary of State Haig, who's been in the White House ready room for most of this time. Word's gone out to the rest of the world that the president of the United States has been shot and wounded, and not seriously. This is a means of reassuring our friends and just informing those who are not that the country still is in hand. The vice president, if the president turns out to be incapacitated, would take the reins. And Mr. Haig indicated that the so-called crisis committee or commission is now in operation, this being a domestic crisis. He was asked that question, in fact, in the White House today and said, yes, that's the case. So he was telling George Bush, who was flying back to Washington, of the events and keeping him apprised of progress or lack of it. They'll undoubtedly get together. The Attorney General and others will make their determinations. The Secretary of Defense is on hand. And the face of it desired is to indicate that the continuity of government is continuing, indicate that to America and to the rest of the world. There's no indication of anything untoward, at least overseas. The Soviets are still having their problem with Poland, which occupied the president during the more pacific part of his day. This morning, he was on the phone to Helmut Schmidt in Germany, and they were formulating a policy that they would follow in case something did happen in Poland. It didn't happen there. In fact, the something that was to happen to this country was going to happen a few hours later in what was normally a pacific speech given at a Hilton Hotel in downtown Washington, D.C. It was there that the headline was made. When Mr. Reagan finished the speech, walked out of the hotel, there was a flurry of gunfire from a pistol, turned out to be a .22 caliber pistol, allegedly in the hand of a 25-year-old young man from Colorado who is in custody, who was pounced upon immediately. Four people were wounded, including the president, who was shot in the chest, Secret Service agent, and a District of Columbia policeman, and James Brady, the president's press secretary, who was severely wounded in the head. Talking to reporters out on the West Coast, Mr. Reagan's eldest son, Michael, discussed this afternoon's events and what he knew of his father's condition.
My father has come out of surgery in fine shape. He's in good condition. As my father asked before he went into surgery, subsequently, as we found out, it was good Republicans doing the surgery. So he is in good shape, and we plan to just keep in touch the same way all of you are keeping in touch.
Did you believe this when you heard it this morning?
No, not really. I was in a business meeting when it happened, and I've had better days, and I hope to have many better days to come. It's sad things like this happen, but I'm just hopeful that and happy that my father has come through it. And as I say, that in my house, we are indeed praying for the other people that were wounded.
Mike, have they told you exactly what damage was done by the bullet?
Not really, no. Only that it was, you know, in the left side, and that he is indeed doing well and in good spirits. My dad's been in good spirits for 70 years. I plan for him to be in spirits for another 70 years.
Those the words of Michael Reagan on the West Coast. As we heard, the other son, the ballet dancer, was found to be in Lincoln, Nebraska when this event overtook him, and he is aboard a chartered plane, a jet plane, flying, having foregone tonight's exercise, and he's on his way back to the Capitol. Should be nearing there very soon. Another interesting bit of information, our station in Dallas, Texas, KRLD, where the suspect, John Hinckley, lived for some time, says a pawn shop there has said that Hinckley was sold a .22 caliber pistol. The information is that the sale was made before last November's election. There is no indication that that was the pistol that was used today, except for the fact that a pawn shop is quoted as having said it sold him one. The Secret Service, which first announced that the caliber of the weapon was .38, got that information later, it says, by looking at a slip of sale for a .38 caliber pistol, which it says it found in Hinckley's pocket. And that was the first of a series of erroneous reports we were given about what actually had happened in Washington today, that everybody had been shot with a much higher caliber gun than .22. But .22 it was, and the slug, we're told, still remains somewhere in the lower left lobe of Mr. Reagan's lung, the doctors having decided not to take it out right away, if it may have fragmented, maybe in pieces. And the lung, as we're told by physicians, has a marvelous recuperative capacity, and lungs heal, whereas arteries and other things might have more difficulty. So the president spoke as he walked in, told people surrounding him, don't worry, told his wife, honey, I forgot to duck, and joked with the hospital staff as they were preparing to give him the anesthetic, wanted to make sure they were all Republicans, and as his son Mike says out on the West Coast, that determination was made that they pretty nearly all were. So Mr. Reagan, we're still waiting for hospital word, for authoritative word from surgeons who performed the operation, who can tell us who were there, who can tell us the extent of the damage and the prognosis. The vice president is in the Capitol. He'll be aided by the other members of the cabinet in making any decisions which are incumbent upon him now. Secretary Haig said that Mr. Reagan still is the functioning president of the United States, however, except that it's obvious he may need a little additional counseling and advice to perform that office in the near future. So, we've had another one, another attempt which has felled three people on a street, has severely wounded the presidential press secretary, who was, as is his duty, in the line of fire, wounded a Secret Service agent, wounded a District of Columbia policeman, and wounded the President of the United States. Ronald Reagan, hospitalized tonight. We're awaiting word on the exact prognosis to see how long he may be here and how long his recovery period may be. His wife, Mrs. Reagan's with him. One of his children is flying from the Midwest to be with him. The world has said its prayers are with him, and a shocked and embarrassed nation is thinking of him. And there'll be no Oscar awards tonight. Mr. Reagan had already pre-taped a little introductory item that he was going to be shown on television this evening. Instead, he's in Washington University Hospital, recovering from a bullet wound which was sustained in an attempt on his life. This is Reed Collins, CBS News, New York.
Tune with WCCO, Minneapolis, St. Paul, 49 degrees. It's 6 o'clock.
And this is Dan Hertzgard with WCCO Radio News. Following today's assassination attempt on President Ronald Reagan, Minnesota Governor Al Quie responded from western Minnesota, where he had planned to meet tonight with county officials.
Well, it's shocking to hear the news, and one lives in concern that that can happen to the chief executive, and you hope that it never will. It does bring back the memories of other situations like that, 1963, and then again, Edward Wallace, the attempt made on his life during campaign. And I imagine that we feel so closely about it because we see that person on television and read about him, and it's so much a part of our lives, and the president is the leader of our country. Well, I surely hope and pray that he'll recover well and be able to give the good leadership that he's been giving to this nation.
Currently, the president is listed in good and stable condition. There were three others wounded in the incident, including presidential press secretary James Brady, who is said to be in very critical condition at this point, and also wounded were a Secret Service agent and a Washington, D.C. policeman. A 22-year-old Colorado man has been arrested and identified as John Hinckley of Evergreen, Colorado. More bad economic news for northeastern Minnesota today. The Air Force announced it was moving up by 8 to 10 months the scheduled phase-out of the Duluth Air Base. The Air Force also announced results of a study indicating a radar base in Maryland and will not be moved to Duluth. Local officials had lobbied the Pentagon to transfer that mission to Duluth. Mayor John Fito says the news is disappointing but no earthquaking surprise. He says the air base pumps about $16 million a year into the economy of the Duluth area, and that phase-out had been scheduled for late 1982 or early 1983. This latest announcement means the phase-out could begin this December. Drugs with an estimated street value of nearly $12,000 have been seized on the Red Lake Indian Reservation. The Bureau of Indian Affairs Police on the reservation say one man is in custody after a weekend raid, which yielded about 25 pounds of marijuana and a variety of harder drugs. The United States Supreme Court let stand a Minnesota Supreme Court decision dealing with deprogramming today. The High Court refused to knock down Minnesota rulings allowing parents the right to detain and deprogram children believed to be influenced by religious cults. A workers' compensation insurance bill passed in a Minnesota Senate subcommittee today. Supporters say the measure will hold the line on rising premiums to employers. It contains a major amendment scrapping the present two-level court system for compensation claims. So the bill goes to the Senate Employment Committee later this week. Twin City weather, cloudy tonight with a slight chance of showers developing toward morning and a low of around 40. Tomorrow, a good chance of showers, occasional thunderstorms with temperatures around 50 to the lower 50s. And then mostly cloudy, windy, and cooler on Wednesday with temperatures in the lower 50s. And the winds, for the most part, will be southeasterly 10 to 20 miles an hour. And presently, we have clouds and 48 degrees. Steve?
All right, Dan, we want to check some sports very quickly. It is now 3 minutes past 6, 48 degrees in the Twins. The biggest night of the year in college basketball is at hand, the NCAA championship, Indiana and North Carolina. We'll fight it out for the national title in Philadelphia. Al Wood is the big gun for North Carolina. Now, Indiana's going to have to stop him if they're going to win the game. And Randy Whitman of Indiana has some ideas on how to do it to Mr. Wood.
Well, you know, Al is such a great player that, you know, you're not really trying, you know, you're not going to stop a player like Al from scoring. You know, you just try to contain him as much as possible. And, you know, I think whoever draws that assignment on Wood is, you know, just going to have to contain him and not let him break loose like he did yesterday.
All right. Morgan Mundane is picking Indiana.
Yes, 66-63.
Low-scoring game, Morgan.
Yes, that's the way I see it. Bobby Knight will be worth 3 points to his club. That'll be the edge.
The NBA playoffs begin tomorrow night with 2 Eastern Conference games. Chicago will play at New York, and Philadelphia will host Indiana. Aaron Broughton of the Gophers signed a tryout contract with the Colorado Rockies of the National Hockey League today, and his brother Neil Broughton is joining the North Stars. He's giving up the books, both boys are, for hopes of careers in the National Hockey League. The second annual East-West All-Star Hockey game will be played tonight at the Met Center. Among those stars are Gopher co-captains Mike Konocki and Steve Alseth. Both will play on the West squad. Alseth is an All-American player and the top scorer in the WCHA. Other Minnesotans playing for the West in tonight's game are Mike Weinkauf of St. Scholastica, Scott Robidoux, who will play defense, and Davey Johnson of Minnesota Duluth, Mark Hengis of St. Thomas, Aaron Roth of St. Scholastica, all forwards. In the National Hockey League, Philadelphia at New York Rangers, Boston's at Buffalo. Buffalo could give the Stars a hand by beating Boston tonight. Boston leads Minnesota by 1 point in the battle for the coveted eighth spot in the standings of the National Hockey League. The first eight teams get the home ice advantage. If Minnesota finishes in eighth and Boston in ninth, then Minnesota will have the home ice advantage against Boston when the playoffs start. The final regularly scheduled game of the season for the Stars is tomorrow night at the Sports Center against the league-leading St. Louis Blues. It's now 6 minutes past 6 o'clock on CCO. It is 48 degrees. The Twins traded center fielder Ken Landreau to the Los Angeles Dodgers today for infielder Mickey Hatcher and two minor league players. Landreau was acquired by the Twins in 1979 in the deal that sent Rod Carew to the California Angels. He hit .305 with 15 home runs his first year with the club, but he slipped to .281 with 7 home runs last season. Hatcher hit .226 in the last part of the 1980 season for the Dodgers. In 1979, he led the Pacific Coast League in hitting with a .371 average. A Twins spokesman says Hatcher, who has been playing third base, will be given a chance to play first base for Minnesota. The Twins also picked up first baseman Kelly Snyder and Matt Reeves, a left-handed pitcher in the trade. Both will be sent to the Twins' Toledo Farm Club. The Twins open up the season a week from Thursday at the Met against Oakland, and you'll hear the broadcast here on CCO. Today, in Grapefruit Circuit play, Pittsburgh 9, the Twins 8. The weatherman says this at 7 minutes past 6, low tonight in the Twin Cities 40, high tomorrow 60 with a 50% chance of rain tomorrow. In Fairmont now, it's 47, Mankato 43, and Bemidji 40. 47 in St. Cloud, Chicago 59 and partly sunny. Partly clear, I should say. In North Dakota, Grand Forks 44, Bismarck 53, Sioux Falls 54, Des Moines 56. The extended forecast for the Twin Cities metropolitan area Thursday through Saturday has partly cloudy skies Thursday with highs in the upper 50s to lower 60s. Showers Friday, highs around 60. Saturday, partly cloudy and about 55. Normal high and low for the period, 48 and 29. So this spring weather will continue with us for the next week or so. On Sunday, March 22nd, at 7:17 a.m., the body of a white female was recovered from Lake Nokomis in Minneapolis. The Hennepin County Medical Examiner's Office is seeking your cooperation in making identification of this individual. The deceased is 5'6" in height, weight 130, brown hair, tied back in a ponytail, blue eyes, estimated age between 40 to 60 years. She was wearing polyester green slacks, a red and yellow print blouse, an olive drab coat, and white work-type shoes. The only jewelry on the body was a gold wedding-type band and a mother's-type ring with four stones. Please contact the Hennepin County Medical Examiner's Office at 347-7125 if you know the identity of this person. It's now 8 minutes past 6 at CCO on the Cannon program. 48 degrees, Twin Cities. President Ronald Reagan is reported to be in good and stable condition at George Washington University Hospital in the nation's capital following an assassination attempt outside the Washington Hilton Hotel this afternoon. Since the president walked into the hospital, the reports on his condition have all been favorable, both before and during the surgery on the president. In an effort to find out more about the president's wound, WCCO Radio's Rich Holder talked at length with Dr. John Najarian of the University of Minnesota Hospital.
With me, Dr. John Najarian, Chief of Surgery at the University of Minnesota. Doctor, we know to this point really very little about the president's injury, but I will go over what we do know, and maybe we can make some assessments from that. The president appeared to have been shot under the left arm. The bullet lodged in his left chest. The report said that it lodged in the lung. A number of arteries were struck, and there was at least partial collapse of that lung. According to the reports we now have, it missed the heart by 1 inch. What can you tell us, first of all, generally about this type of wound?
Well, this type of wound, a bullet wound of this sort, does cause a lot of damage in the lung if it passes through the lung, as it must have in this case. When that happens, two things occur. One, that you have loss of blood from the lung by blood vessels that are obviously severed. But in addition, that you puncture the lung and so that air leaks out, and with this you get a collapse, or at least a partial collapse of the lung, since it's in a confined cavity and does get compressed by the collapse from the air that escapes into the thorax, or the confined cavity which the lung resides. The important consideration there is whether or not the lung itself that it went through or the part that it went through was sufficiently destroyed that it required removal of part of the lung. Sometimes that occurs. Most important considerations are injury to the heart, which I understand that the bullet missed, or injury to very large blood vessels within the lung, which the bullet must have also missed, or he would have had much more difficulty almost immediately upon being hit with the bullet.
Yeah, the president walked into the hospital from his limousine. Obviously, the people around him didn't know he had been hit, and maybe he didn't know it himself for quite some time. Is that customary as well with this type of injury?
That can happen. As I understand it, it was a .22 caliber long pistol. This is a small trajectory, and the amount of damage it would do would be could be very small unless he had a large blood vessel, and that he'd lose a little bit of air, a little bit of blood, and he'd still feel pretty good. Sometimes people have even been hit with a .22 caliber gun have not even known that they were hit because it is such a small bullet. So I think this is highly possible, and if he did walk in as it was stated he did, I think that this means the injury was probably reasonably minor.
They say he's in good and stable condition at the moment, still in surgery, expected out shortly. The one report also mentioned that he was on a respirator. Is that also something that we can expect in this case?
Absolutely. I think as soon as he goes into surgery and he's anesthetized, then he's on a respirator. All patients, you cannot operate on the chest of a patient without putting him on a respirator because we need to breathe for the patient when we open his lungs or open his chest cavity. As soon as you open the chest cavity, you lose the negative pressure within the chest cavity, and therefore it's necessary to breathe for the patient. The anesthesiologist does this, and this is a respirator, and then he'll probably be on that respirator for a short period of time thereafter until he wakes up from the anesthesia. He'll have a tube placed in his chest to suck away the air that's escaping from the lung, a chest tube, and this will provide him with an opportunity to re-expand his chest and to get off the respirator. I would guess with any luck he'll be off the respirator this evening or by tomorrow morning.
It was also indicated early on that he had received one unit of blood either during or just prior to the surgery. That is not alarming in itself, is it?
No, it isn't. And as a matter of fact, that's a very small amount of blood, one unit of blood. And that concerns me just a little that he certainly didn't sustain a very heavy injury. It must have bled later to require the operation. Sometime when they only have that much blood loss, you might be able to get away without operating and just putting in a chest tube and sucking out the blood in the air. So that he must have had a little more damage than was first indicated, and that's the reason why they had to operate.
They've also indicated that they did not remove the bullet in this first surgery. What does that mean to you?
That doesn't mean much. I would think. I don't know where the bullet is. Somebody said, or I think you said, that it was in his lung. I doubt that. If it were, they'd probably get it out. Most likely, it's lodged in his back somewhere, probably in the muscles of his back. And if it is, it'd be hard to get to. And in essence, there really would be no reason to try to remove it from there until a later date. We frequently leave bullets in. As a matter of fact, I have a patient who has a bullet in the back of her head and the back of her chest, which has never been taken out because they're in dangerous places and they don't give her any particular difficulty. Unless it gets infected, and bullets frequently are not infected, they don't always need to be removed as our epics of Western motion pictures once indicated.
President Reagan is 70 years of age. Looking at this particular, I believe they call it a thoracotomy, the operation,
mm-hmm.
and his age, and his, we are all aware that he's in good physical condition. He prides himself on that. What is your prognosis for recovery from this type of an operation and injury?
I think it would be excellent. He's as good a 70-year-old as I've seen. I've seen him up close when I was in California. I know that he stays in excellent shape. He doesn't smoke, and that's certainly a plus on his side as far as recovery from this type of operation would be concerned. And I think that...
This is Reed Collins, CBS News in New York, where we are continuing our coverage of the attempt on the life of President Ronald Reagan, who this afternoon at mid-afternoon in Washington, D.C., was wounded by an assassin's bullet that struck him in the lower chest. He was not severely wounded. He was able to walk into a hospital, having been taken there in his limousine. He has undergone surgery for repair of damage caused by a .22 caliber bullet that pierced the left lower lobe of his lung, apparently, and remains lodged in his chest. He walked into the hospital. He joked with his wife, who was rushed there from the White House, saying, "Honey, I forgot to duck."
He joked with the people in the operating room, hoping that they were all Republicans. And apparently he was in good condition at least before the operation began. This chain of events began after the president had completed a speech to a labor union gathering at the Washington Hilton Hotel. He had walked up with his entourage to enter his limousine and go back to the White House when suddenly a barrage of shots from a .22 caliber pistol rang out. Three other people were felled right on the sidewalk on the scene. A Treasury agent, a Secret Service man, that is, a Washington District of Columbia policeman, and the presidential press secretary, James Brady, aged 40, was shot in the head, severely wounded. Those three lay on the ground as the president was rushed into his limousine. He had turned in response, apparently, to the cry of his name, had raised his left arm above his head. It's believed that this was the approximate time that the bullet took effect. He, we're told, didn't really realize this. It wasn't until he was inside the limousine that he realized he had, in fact, been wounded. And then he was taken immediately to the hospital, where the surgery was performed a short time later. There's been a welter of information, and some of it misinformative. First, it was said that it was a .38 caliber pistol that was used. It turned out, fortunately for the parties involved, to be a .22 caliber gun. It has been said that the suspect who was seized on the scene is a John Hinckley of Evergreen, Colorado, his age given as 25. He's identified also as a resident of the Denver suburb of Evergreen, but a man who grew up in Dallas, Texas, where authorities today were gathering information about young Hinckley, information that might perhaps shed just some light on the events or the whys of today. David Dick reports.
School officials in Highland Park, an affluent incorporated community located within the city limits of Dallas, were busy today trying to add more pieces to the background of John Warnick Hinckley, Jr., the man accused of shooting President Reagan. Hinckley's picture appeared in a yearbook. He was identified as a 1973 graduate of Highland Park High School. He had been a member of the Student Government Club, the Spanish and the Rodeo Clubs. Later, he attended Texas Tech University in Lubbock, but returned to the Dallas area before graduating. After that, Hinckley moved with his family to Denver. A junior high school acquaintance here recalled he was a real nice guy, moody sometimes, but one who never talked about guns. David Dick, CBS News, Dallas.
And that is what little light can be shed on the man who has now been formally charged with having attempted to shoot the president and who did do it. Young John Hinckley. Washington is, of course, in a state of shock, as is the world, as the news has been transmitted around and about. In our studios in Washington, my colleague Phil Jones. Phil, have you been up on the Hill? What are people saying? What are they doing?
Well, what they're doing is listening to a lot of radio and watching television and keeping up with the events. When it all occurred this afternoon, the Senate was in the midst of its argument over the Reagan budget cut proposals. Democrats were attempting to restore many of the cuts that Mr. Reagan was asking for. Senator Baker, the majority leader, walked onto the floor, took a microphone, and announced that he had just received word that President Reagan had been shot at. Of course, at that time, it was believed that the president hadn't been hit. Democrat Bill Bradley, senator from New Jersey, had the floor at the time, and before continuing his comments on the budget, said that he was really in a state of anxiety, that in these days to come, there should be some chance to reflect and address in some way the underlying sickness in a society where these kinds of events become commonplace. And shortly after those words from Senator Bradley, Senator Kennedy, who has had so much tragedy in his family, also stood up and said, violence and hatred are alien to everything that this country is about, and that our prayers must go out along with a resolution to rid our society of violence and its cause. It was then, shortly after this, that Senator Baker came on to announce the bad news that he had received word that the president had indeed been hit, and the Senate recessed with all members back in their offices listening to radio and watching television. About 6 o'clock this evening, after they had received word that the president was going to be okay, Senator Baker called the Senate back in. Republican John Danforth from Missouri offered 3 prayers, one for the president, one for those who had been injured, and probably as important as any, one to this nation at this particular time.
Well, Phil, are people staying in their offices? Are they going home? Are the streets empty? Is there normal activity?
At this point, many of the senators are beginning to leave. The House was not in session today.